Hi, welcome to Off Script. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Today on the show, we're taking a look at A Quiet Place Day One. We've all seen the trailer, probably dozens of times if you're like us. Now the movie's out, we've seen it. And good news, better than I thought. Better than I thought. Stick around for the Quiet Place Day One review. I was actually pleasantly surprised. We're also going to take a look at Kinds of Kindness. The new Yorgos Lanthimos film is out. It is so weird, dude. And we're not a spoiler podcast, so we're not going to spoil anything for you. But full disclosure, I think it might be better. The less you know, the better going in. We're doing this one at the end of the show. Stick around. We got a lot of good stuff before then. You can decide between now and then.
Only.
That's right. You can decide between now and then if it's worth your time, if you want to listen to us or not. All right. Like, you got time. Hang out. Relax, don't stress. We're going to talk about some upcoming trailers, some things that are coming out later this summer that you might want to keep an eye out for. And before we get to all that, we got to get to the news. Our first story this week, our local Alamo Drafthouse is opening back up in Texas. Big news for Texas fans of the show and also Minnesota. Andy, what do you know about this?
Well, Alamo Drafthouse in the DFW area has had this roller coaster of a month. Earlier in June, they filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, I think, and all five of DFW locations closed, including one in Minnesota. Like a week later, Sony bought the entire chain of Alamo Drafthouse. They got bought out, and they recently, as of this week, announced that they will be reopening those shuttered theaters in the DFW area and the Minnesota one kind of as soon as possible, which is still going to be probably by the end of the summer, but they are looking to reopen all five locations and include, like, they're going to rehire anyone who lost their job, and they're going to offer much better compensation packages for employees. So Alamo Drafthouse back on the market.
Yes. You may remember that all six previous locations here in Dallas were located by or operated by a franchisee called Two is One, None is None LLC. They filed for Chapter 7 after saying that they had tried to coordinate with Alamo, like, proper, like the bigger entity, on how they can lower prices or figure out a way to get more people in, just something to try to generate more business, because according to them, it's just not possible with the current model. Like, they just couldn't make it work. Now Sony's coming back with, like, not only the same places opening, but with better benefits and 401k match and paid medical leave, accrued PTO, all great things, especially considering one of these locations here had people going on strike because they didn't like the conditions under the previous LLC. That was a real thing that happened. I guess I'm glad to hear things are going well for Alamo Drafthouse. I'm curious, Andy, what do you think will change at these locations to try to cover that berth, like to try to get to a place where they can afford to pay people more and give people more benefits, but also not have the finance problems that the previous franchisee had? What do you think? More exclusive events, cool Sony screenings? Are we running Venom 2 again? What do you predict is coming to Alamo Drafthouse?
Well, I think just having the backing of Sony is going to help so much, because they can kind of experiment. They can kind of bide their time a little bit. I mean, it may mean closing one or more of the locations. Like, it's ambitious to have five locations in one Metroplex area. So we'll see. I mean, I'm hoping they improve their menu. Everything had gotten really expensive, the ticket prices and the menu itself, so I would like to see those come down a little bit, fall in line with other words. I'm used to paying like $10 or $11 for a ticket. It shouldn't be that. Now, I mean, we were paying like $15 for like a 3 p.m. matinee. It's like, what's going on here? The menu had gotten smaller and a lot more expensive, so I would like to see, yeah, more options and have those prices be more reasonable as well.
It's true. The seats aren't even heated, which is like a big downside, because AMC and Cinemark got those heated seats, but not at Alamo Drafthouse, at least the ones I've been to. What I do know is I'd like to see more cool screenings, obviously, more things that perpetuate movies, maybe a little bit more merch giveaways. God, I love the posters they got in collaboration with Mondo, a company that Alamo used to own that started there. They've since been sold to a company that makes Funko. I just think it's just called Funko, Funko Pops, right? More stuff with them, right? Poster collabs, like more things just to bring people in. That's what I think would be rad. I do love my Alamo Drafthouse, but Andy's right. Like, it's not getting any cheaper, and if it doesn't, then I hope they find more reasons to pull people in. Our next story this week, Wicked has moved up in the November release schedule. It's now coming out on the 22nd, moving up from the 27th. Andy, what is Wicked running away from? What key film has moved the Hollywood blockbuster 1 week up, and what's it going to compete with?
Wicked is scared of the mouse. which is Disney bringing, which is going to open Moana 2 on November 27th. That's going to be a huge movie. So Wicked is running away from that opening. That actually comes out on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And so they're now going to come out on the 22nd, which is the Friday before, and which will be coming out the same day as Gladiator 2, Ridley Scott's long, long awaited follow up to the original 2000 Gladiator. So that's the new date. It's good counter programming. Gladiator 2 is probably like a hard R, violent, you know, real macho kind of thing. Wicked's a musical. So I think it's good counter programming for sure.
Yeah, I think Wicked moving up is smart. I hate that they're running away from Disney because, you know, come on, everybody can step to Disney, and I don't think Moana 2 is that scary. But we're just about to talk about the success of Inside Out 2. So looking at those numbers, I think Universal's looking, you know, at Moana 2 and thinking, oh God, we might want to get out of the way of this thing. Admittedly, moving before Thanksgiving is a smart move because all the moms and grandmas and aunties and whoever is going to Thanksgiving are going to be able to talk about Wicked because a few of them will have seen it by the day, right? That's the idea. If you're not going to come out on Thanksgiving, give it a few days before, let it charge up. They're going to come to dinner. Oh my God, did you see that new Wicked movie? Oh, I thought it was great. I didn't like that much. I can't wait for part two. They did Gravity and then it hit credits. Anything could happen. Meanwhile, the internet is trying to get excited over the idea of the Wicked Gladiator mashup, a la Barbenheimer, right? Two ways to go about it. You could already call it Wickadiator or Gladicid. Take your pick. Glue Wicked is probably more fun for what it's worth. But, you know, Andy, do you think this is going to get Barbenheimer cultural status? I'm not so sure.
No, I doubt. I think, I mean, they keep trying to force that. That was a very organic thing. Again, neither company pushed for Barbenheimer. That was a spawn of the internet. And then everything kind of came from that, then it became this phenomenon and sensation. And both movies were really huge. I think both of these will do good going into Thanksgiving week. Very different movies. The musical is definitely aimed at younger audiences, probably women. Gladiator 2, obviously, much more aimed at men. So I think you have a lot. And also, I know people that were, they were dreading. They're like, oh, which one do I go to first, Wicked or Moana 2? I don't know. And now you don't have to choose because you'll be able to see both.
That's right. And you can take dad or your uncle or your cousin or whoever, your bros, to see Gladiator 2, which I'm predicting it's got to be Ridley Scott's biggest movie in a while, right? Like, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure. Like, all but guaranteed Gladiator 2 will make bank. But not the bank like Inside Out 2's been making. Last story this week from the box office. Man, I wish it was a busier news week, but Andy pointed out in the pre-show as we were getting our stuff together, like, Inside Out just continues to run away, whereas, like, Kevin Costner's new epic Horizon is just not getting to where it needs to be, and that seems to be the draw for attention as far as movie eyes go. What's going on this week, Andy?
So, Inside Out 2 was the winner again this weekend with $57 million, but also, notably, crossed the $1 billion mark, the first movie in 2024. To reach that milestone. The first movie since, I think, Barbie, actually, last summer to reach that. Inside Out 2 just can't be stopped, which I find a little confusing because I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good movie, but not like the phenomenon that it is. But you never know. You know, that's what they say. No one knows anything in this town. So that's incredible. A Quiet Place 2 did come in second with $53 million. A series best, which means we'll probably end up getting a few more of these. It's doing good overseas as well. Horizon absolutely bombed at number three with $11 million on like a $100 million budget. And everyone's got excuses now. Michael Rooker, who's in the movie, is like, well, it's all those kids on that damn TikTok.
It's those damn kids.
And no attention span. And they just want 90-minute movies. It's like, yeah, there's
phones.
People want nine, and then Kevin Costner himself is like, well, you know, we want to see if this thing has legs. We, you know, it's not all about opening weekend, but it kind of is. It generally, in modern box office, it's kind of about opening weekend. It's rare that something will just kind of have legs and stay on in the theater. Number four at the box office was Bad Boys Ride or Die, which is also doing really well. I think it just crossed the $300 million mark worldwide. So a big win for Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, and Bad Boys franchise. So really excited week at the box office. Inside Out 2. $1 billion film.
We covered Inside Out 2 just a few weeks ago on the show. You can check our review back if you'd like to listen to that. But for what it's worth, like, solid feature all the way through. And as much as I like a Pixar original, the success is undeniable. Over $1 billion globally. Dude, there's no way I would have thought, no shot I would have thought Inside Out 2 is going to hit $1 billion globally. Insane success. Like I said at the story before, if I was Universal or anybody else, I would be a little worried about where Moana 2 is going to go. I'm definitely going to be upshooting it now. Originally, I was like, ah, that movie's not going to do that good. Who cares? But, like, my God, people clearly care about successful properties from Disney. I don't know. I was a fool to not care. Quiet Place, we're about to talk about. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to also say Despicable Me 4, which I thought was probably going to be the biggest thing of the summer, is actually, which opens this week, is maybe shaking in their boots a little bit, because they were hoping to be the big animated hit of the summer, and now they got to compete against Inside Out 2 on their huge opening weekend. So it's going to be a battle of animation.
Sure. Meanwhile, like, Quiet Place doing great. Like, who would have thought the third entry would be doing the best? I know the first one was a little bit shaky, John Krasinski directing. Second one seems solid, Cillian Murphy's in it. But the third one, in the city, in the gimmick horror series, still doing awesome. Like, don't believe it. Can't believe it. Shan't believe it. But the numbers are undeniable. And as for Horizon, what do you say, right, Andy? You already said it's the kids on their phones. It's something, something, something. But like you said, when we were talking about this earlier, like, the success of something like Oppenheimer, like, really is undeniable. You know, like, people will turn out for a 3-hour epic. I think people are trained to wait for streaming services. It's hard to get my folks out to see a feature, right? Like, and especially knowing how long it is, dude, being able to go to the bathroom and hit pause whenever you want would be an asset in something like Horizon. Knowing that it's supposed to have three parts to go, do you still feel it should have been a television series? How do you feel about
it's actually
it?
Supposed, well, it's, yeah. It is supposed to actually be four parts.
Four parts.
I think they have made part two. So part two will be coming out in August, and then it was kind of like TBD on the rest. But here's the thing. I mean, we do a film podcast, and we had a choice of 2 3-hour movies, and we did not choose to see Horizon. We chose Kinds of Kindness instead for specific reasons. And the reviews have been pretty unanimous in that it's 3 hours long. There are 3 or 4 major storylines that are all disparate, and they don't come together because, oh, you got to watch movies 2, 3, and 4. It's basically a 12-hour miniseries put to film, and, you know, I guess they were thinking people would be excited. The problem is that the demographic that this plays to, which is kind of an older generation, that generation doesn't go to movies very much, and they would absolutely just wait for streaming, and that's kind of what's happened. Apparently, Kevin Costner doesn't show up until the second hour, even, so, yeah.
It sounds like Costner's made incredible television, incredible film. We'll just have to see it. But I guess you and I probably aren't going to watch it till it comes to streaming. Would you cover it for the show? I'd probably, like, if on streaming, if I could have a weekend to watch it, I think I'd probably watch it.
If it's a slow week and there's nothing else going on, sure. Mm. But by the time it's on streaming, both parts will probably be available.
Yeah. Well, this week has not been slow, so I'm excited to talk about the features we've got. Andy's going to be taking Quiet Place Day 1. I'll take Kinds of Kindness at the end. 3 hours well spent, by the way. I know we're going to talk about it, but boy, I had a great time, so stick around for that review. In the meantime, I'll get out of Andy's way so we can jump into it. Andy, please, take it away.
A Quiet Place Day 1. So this is the prequel to the Quiet Place series, which started in 2018, directed by John Krasinski. I believe it was his debut. This is a world in which an alien invasion has happened, and these aliens are blind, but they hear very well, and so everyone has to be very, very quiet to survive. This is the gimmick. Worked really well in the first movie. The whole movie is practically silent, and it was amazing to see audiences be silent throughout these long, quiet sequences. It was followed up with 2020's A Quiet Place Part 2, and A Quiet Place Day 1 is the day of the alien invasion. Instead of a rural setting, we are in the city. We are in New York City, Manhattan, I believe, and we meet Samira, played by Lupita Nyong'o, who's a cancer patient living in hospice who doesn't have a whole lot of time to live, and she knows it. She's kind of over it. She's over living. She's over dying. She just kind of is ready to be done with all this. One day, the hospice group goes to a field trip into the city to catch a puppet show. And also she wants to get this pizza. There's a pizza place that she just loves, and just, you know, it's one of the last things she wants to do. This is when the alien invasion happens with the creatures that we know from the previous movies that are, you know, super strong and violent and kind of can't be taken down, and that you have to be quiet around. What's different about this one is that because it's a city, it's loud. There's cars, there's people, there's lots of noise, there's trains. But Samira does not seek to escape. She is still all about that pizza, wants to get it. This might be her last chance. And so that's what she goes on a quest for. And she runs into Joseph Quinn's Eric. Joseph Quinn, of course, from Stranger Things season 4, who's a bit of a lost dog. He doesn't really know what to do, where to go. And so they form an unlikely duo, help each other out, try to save each other in their own unique way. That's our setup. Zach, what'd you think?
I was skeptical about going into A Quiet Place day one because I think it's a gimmick horror and I'm tired of the gimmick. I get the horror. I see it. It's scary because if you don't want to make noise, I totally respect it. But we've seen two of these features. We've done it twice. Could we really do it again? I'm very satisfied to say you can. A Quiet Place day one totally works, dude. And I can't believe it. I can't believe it works. But I think it works for a couple of key reasons. Number one, an entirely new setting. It is so nice to have these problems in a city full of people and traffic and problems, right? Like, New York is such an exciting place where you have to try to be very quiet amidst disaster. Number two, the cast. Lupita Nyong'o is a revelation. She's amazing. She always has been. She crushes it. Lots of acting with her eyes. Incredible. Joseph Quinn is a fantastic newcomer. I'm glad to have him. Number three, the director. Michael Sarnowski, director of Pig, is the real star of this show. He is so good. He wrote the screenplay and wrote the story alongside John Krasinski, who did not return to direct. He was busy working on If. We didn't cover that for the show, but A Quiet Place Day One is tremendous. Emotional, a roller coaster, and doesn't dwell too much on the monsters. In fact, it hardly needs them. And it's really cool that I could say that about a movie like A Quiet Place. I'm worried whatever comes after this won't hold a candle to this one. I thought they couldn't do better, and they have, and I'm not even sure they can top this. Where do you want to start talking about this, Andy?
Start with our plot a little bit. And also, this has a much bigger budget. It was, I think, $80 million movie. The other two were kind of mid-size. And so we get that kind of summer blockbuster, like the setting. We got, you know, lots of action sequences. We got special effects. And so it has that kind of Hollywood polish. But again, we have a different story because we have a character who's not really interested in surviving, and one who kind of doesn't know how to survive. But the other two movies have had really strong emotional cores, and this one continues to have that. Samira's character was a writer, a poet in a past life, and has just kind of lost the kind of appreciation for life because hers is being cut so short. But it's taken her a lot longer to die from cancer than she has been told, and which is also kind of wearing on her as well. Joseph Quinn's character, Eric, is just kind of he's lost. He's in law school, or he's a lawyer, and but he's British, and he doesn't know anyone here, and he doesn't really know what to do. And it's great because Samira doesn't want to be team. They're like, we don't need to team up. I'm going to do my thing. You go save yourself. But they eventually kind of have to team up, but they form a very kind of strong emotional bond, and there's good human storytelling going on amidst the chaos, with of course great performances by both. Lupita Nyong'o is just incredible eyeball acting. Like there's so much where she doesn't say a word. She doesn't, you know, nothing. It's all face. It's amazing.
I remember being really pissed that she didn't get a nomination for her performance in Us, the Jordan Peele film, which I'm still pissed she didn't get a nom for, but she really is incredible. Like, this movie is just another feather in the cap. Not to mention a bit of trivia that I've learned. She was apparently deathly afraid of cats before shooting this feature. So it was a pro-cat movie. She has a cat named Frodo in the film, played by a pair of twin cats. And she apparently had to do, like, cat therapy to, like, spend time with cats and figure, because she apparently thought they hated her and she'd had bad experiences. And now she owns one and posts about it all the time. She contributes to, like, charities. pro cat film for all the people out there that like survive like disaster movies with the dog in it, and you hope the dog makes it. Doesthedogdie.com. Good news. This is a cat film now, and it's entirely possible to work. But I love the setting. I know I talked a little bit in the open about it. I want to talk a little bit more about it. New York is a fantastic place to make a disaster movie because it's big and it's bombastic and there's so much that can go wrong. It's not just crowds of people screaming and running away. It's buildings toppling, buses slamming into light poles, right? Like fire hydrants going off, glass ceilings shattering. Anything can happen, right? Like tons of potential for big bad things. I'm reminded of like 28 Weeks Later, right? The film that followed Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later. 28 Days is a zombie movie that's functionally out in the country. It's basically out in the woods. It's low budget. It's small. The follow-up is like in the city. Big things are happening. The military is involved. And that is a very messy setting to try to be quiet. I think it's accomplished really well. It's not a very long journey. They're not in the city very long over the course of the film because the film only happens over the course of a few days. But what would you expect, right? Like, it's a pretty disastrous situation. These monsters, these creatures descend on New York and suddenly you have to be as quiet as possible. What happens if you start snoring? What happens if your cat starts meowing? Like, it begs the question of how would you survive? You put yourself in those shoes. How would you make it? And walking out of the theater, you get the clever effect that I think the last two movies had. We start to notice how loud things are that you do, right? Like you click your car on, beep, beep. You're like, oh, that would have roasted me. In my movie, two people had their phones go off. Two separate people. The first thing I thought was like, you never would have made it past act. Y'all would have been one of those people in the open that got roasted, you know? You never would have made it. You wouldn't have survived. So fun to go with friends, I think. A fun movie to experience with people.
I wanted to talk about the action sequences, which there are a couple of big ones. There's a moment where somehow or another they find out that the creatures cannot swim, and they say everyone's got to get off the island. Anyone on there, there's like, you know, radio or like helicopter announcements. And this ends up with this kind of zombie walk where people very slowly come out of hiding and start making their way down the street, but it's like there's thousands of people. So inevitably, they end up making a lot of noise, and there's a big, you know, that draws the aliens, and that is a long and extended sequence that's very harrowing, a lot of heart pounding stuff. And there's another one that's kind of like they're either in the sewer or subway, and it's flooded, something like that. There's a long water sequence, reminding me there's one in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes as well. This must be a thing to add to your action movie, but that was also really good. And again, this makes it so you're not just creeping around quietly the whole time. You have these instances where you can be really loud. And there's some footage from the trailer where, you know, they're running through the streets and they're like, they're trying to make noise, one person throws a rock at a car window to shatter, to distract. And so they kind of have made a lot of excuses to be noisy. So the action sequences really work in this.
Yeah. Additionally, like there's a really towering emotional lightning rod right through the middle of A Quiet Place Day One that Michael Cernowski brings to the table here with Sam's condition. None of that is in the trailers. And thank God. Thank God this movie opens with a sequence that tells you you don't know everything yet. Thank God a movie that has been mass marketed to people that seems to show us everything in the trailer opens with you haven't seen everything that's in the trailer. Thank God. Like, it gives you something to chew on. It gives us somewhere to go. And Sam's story is particularly harrowing because I think we've had conditions like this in A Quiet Place. You've had conditions where somebody is sick or needs meds and somebody has to go to a pharmacy to get them and be as quiet as possible doing it. We've seen that sequence before. But Sam's position on it, this devil may care kind of attitude of, you know what, I've already functionally run out of time, so I'm not scared of death anymore, and therefore I do not fear these things like other people do, is interesting. And then combining that with an out-of-towner, right, just functionally a random passerby who ends up getting tangled up and involved in this and ultimately wants to help because he too kind of sees that glimmer of humanity in all of this tragedy, is really clever. Like, combine that with a solid score with the returning composer from Pig. His name escapes me. I'll look him up in just a second here. You get a surprisingly human feature, which is why, like I said, I don't think you even really need a lot of the monsters, because you don't get a lot of monster time as far as identity goes. Like, it's not like a slasher film where you see Michael Myers taking off his mask, or you learn a little bit more about Freddy's backstory in Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, you don't really get a lot of that here because you don't need it. They're these nameless, faceless creatures that just immediately eliminate anything that makes sound. That's basically all you need. That's kind of not even the point of the movie. The point is the journey these characters are making, and ultimately the reason why they're making it. And I think that's really meaningful. Like, it helps it step through, like, just a simple genre of horror into something that's, like, surprisingly thoughtful, that I just did not expect walking into the third feature in the Quiet Place universe. You know what I mean? It's like when that Transformers Bumblebee movie came out and totally popped, and people were like, a Transformers movie is good again. I don't believe it. Like, solid, solid all the way through. Couldn't believe how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah. The characters are good, and they're well acted. Joseph Quinn, who I think was, I did not have a high opinion of him just from this character that he played from Stranger Things. I was just kind of eye rolling, but he really is a top notch actor. He is he's in Gladiator 2, and Ridley Scott's film comes out in the fall. So he's really showing his acting chops here as well. And we get quiet scenes, pardon the pun, of just our two leads where they are not in danger and they are kind of going over their, you know, respective traumas and issues and finding humanity within each other. And again, like, it's very disciplined for the movie to take that kind of time and not just feel like it has to have action sequences constantly. It slows down to get the human story and to propel that forward.
Yeah. Composer, by the way, is Alexis Grapsis. I wanted to say, I probably pronounced that wrong, but great work. Strong soundtrack. Sounds good. Very emotional. Man, rock solid all the way through. I don't want to give anything away about this feature. I do want to say I like the runtime. It's like 100 minutes. Real tidy, man. It would be easy for this movie to be 2 hours 10. Doesn't waste your time. All right, it's not what we're doing in A Quiet Place Day One. We're doing our feature. We're getting in, we're getting out, and we're spending our money wisely. And it's not all good. I will say there are a couple downsides. Namely, I think they had some weird business happening in reshoots. I noticed in the trailer that I was just talking about that said, like, the whole movie's in there. There's at least 2 full sequences in that trailer that never happened in the film. They shot them, they staged for them, they blocked them, they booked studio days, they cost millions of dollars a day to shoot. They're not in here. Additionally, the ending is not odd, but there's a couple sequences where they, like, run into a group of people and you never really spend any time with any of the people they run into. You just kind of brush past them real fast. And I wonder if maybe there had been a scene where they exchanged something with them or there was a conversation or something. Like, they just brush over it real quickly, real broad strokes. We don't have time. That's all fine, but I think if you're looking at it with a fine-tooth comb, there's a little bit of editing room footage on the floor, I think, of the edit. What am I trying to say here? They cut some weird stuff out, I think. But overall, I think it lands. Like, especially kind of the more emotional bits. So those are the things that I think is the third, like, the through line. That stuff all works good. Overall, a pretty satisfying prequel. Anything else you want to say, Andy, before we get to the final recommendations?
I'm ready.
Andy, would you recommend A Quiet Place Day One?
Yeah, I would. I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed this. It's different from the other two movies, but it stays within that genre. It doesn't give too into the gimmick of having to be quiet. It's loud. There's big action scenes. We have incredible performances from our two leads, Joseph Quinn and Lupita Nyong'o. Really surprised with this. It's only 100 minutes. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Really highly recommend.
Yeah, same boat. Quiet Place Day One is solid. I can't believe it. I was skeptical going in. I wasn't so sure. I started seeing people on the timeline say, hey, Michael Sarnowski might be the best part of this movie on top of a bunch of really good parts. Like, you should go check it out. Sure enough, it's a good time. I can't believe it. The last two movies I was warm on, this one pretty hot. I think Quiet Place Day One is a good time. Lots of fun. Stands alone. I don't think you had to have seen the other preachers. Go check it out. Go see it in the big theater if you can, right? Big screen. Loud. You want to watch it loud. It does get quiet.
Yes, absolutely.
With that being said, we need to introduce our next segment. Going to look at some upcoming trailers, some things that are exciting us later this summer. I'm taking the first one, but typically Andy intros the segment. Andy, you mind giving us the header, and then I'll jump in with number one?
It's time for the trailer park.
So, the first film we are talking about this week of three is Bando Stone and the New World. What is Bando Stone and the New World, you ask? Well, that's kind of what the rest of us are asking. This is a feature, we think. And it's coming to IMAX theaters, we think. What we do know about it is it is from Donald Glover, also known as Childish Gambino. It's a film to accompany the release of his new album. He just dropped a single today called Lithonia, and I think he's got a full album coming with this feature, and this is the film that is accompanying it. As far as I can tell, we'll compare it to something like Pink Floyd's The Wall or Daft Punk's Interstellar 5555, a film that accompanies an album release. But this seems to be going to theaters, I think. The story, though, what is it, right? Well, Bando Stone, played by Donald Glover, is a singer. He lives on what appears to be an island in Hawaii. When he wakes up one day, things are overgrown, and nobody's home. Nobody's anywhere, actually. He's the only person he can find. And things are odd. He goes to the post office, nobody's there. He sees a chicken walking backwards down the street. He swings by a convenience store to get some clothes, and suddenly, somebody shows up. A woman, and what appears to be her son, with a shotgun, who wants to know who this man is and what he's doing here. And he explains, of course, I'm Bando Stone, the singer. She doesn't recognize him. And they, together, have to, I don't know, travel across the island and figure out what's going on. But at night, strange things happening. So the lights come out and there's alien creatures or some kind of something. And what I assume is big music and wild ideas. It's Bando Stone and the New World. And like I said, I wish I had more info for you, but we kind of don't know. The IMDb page went up like yesterday, and I know it's coming to IMAX. I don't know if it's getting a wide release, but it looks like a full damn movie. Like, looking at the trailer, it's a real film that's been shot. Like, it's not like some green screen junk from Robert Rodriguez or anything. Like, it looks to be on location. Like, it looks to have a budget. I just don't know anything about it. Andy, what do you know about Bando Stone?
I mean, not much. I knew that Donald Glover was working on new music, but I didn't realize this was going to be a whole film, an album concept project. I was looking for the IMDb page yesterday, and I just couldn't find it because it hadn't been put up. I didn't even know what the release date was, which I believe is September. No, we still don't know. It's release TBD. We're not real sure. I think this looks cool because it's like an alien invasion, something or other, because there's parts where he's like running from lasers that make these cube shapes. So there's definitely something post-apocalyptic like that going on, but it's still not a whole lot of answers. But it's a cool project. This is allegedly his final album as Childish Gambino. He doesn't plan on making any more music as of right now. So I guess we'll see what it's about. But I think it looks cool. I'm interested in it for sure.
Yeah, I feel like if we could get through Cocaine Bear, I can go see whatever Bando Stone in the New World is. Like, it's got it. How bad could it be, right? It's a goofy something. Like, I'm sure it'll be a good time.
Next, we're going to be taking a look at Hellboy, the Crooked Man, which this is based on a comic book property. Hellboy was originally made into a film way back in 2004 by Guillermo del Toro, who also did the sequel, Hellboy 2, The Golden Army. It was then also rebooted in 2018-2019, starring Stranger Things' David Harbour as Hellboy. That was kind of a disappointment. So it's gotten some big studio treatment, and now we get this what kind of looks like a student film directed by Brian Taylor for Ketchup Entertainment. This is so scaled down because Hellboy movies look like they're like comic book movies. They have big budgets, costumes, special effects, all that. This is so bare bones. The storyline is that they're like out in the 1950s Appalachia and this haunted town where there is some entity known as the Crooked Man kind of pulling strings, haunting people, possessing people. But this looks real, real budget. No famous people are attached to this. The Hellboy's being played by one Jack Kessie, who I don't know from anything. And I'm interested in this because I do like the property, but man, it's just wild to see something that has gotten the big Hollywood treatment now get like the film school treatment.
the micro budget. It reminds me of like Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, but not in the way that like Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey was like cynical and taking advantage of an IP running out. As far as I can tell, Crooked Man is made in earnest from the people who made the comic, right? Like that's as I understand it, and is based very closely off of the Crooked Man storyline, I think. And in that way, because it is earnest, and I mean this sincerely, I would love for this to be good. Superhero movies are so drastically blown out over budget that the idea of one coming out and being micro budget and leaning all the way in on obscure horror, if this worked, if this popped, if this played, not only could they easily greenlight another Hellboy film and have another one made, this would open up venues, I think, for additional odd comic book properties to see maybe more theatrical play. It's weird. It doesn't look awesome on its face, but like, I don't know, man, I'd probably give it a go. Like I went and saw Winnie the Pooh, right? Like, and because Winnie the Pooh was made just to cash in, I had to watch that thinking the whole time, man, this is really just not even an attempt at anything quality. This is just to make money. It might as well have gone straight to Redbox. Hellboy, however, I think is meant to be perceived with a bit more something. As I understand it anyway, as I'm reading this, maybe I got it wrong, but in that way, like I would like to give it a shot. I think I would be willing to give this a chance. I think it's worth maybe my time. Who knows? Worst comes to worst, it's forgettable, right? Like we just don't talk about it. Oh yeah, it was like that direct to DVD one that went straight to theater. But like again, it just seems to be made by people who care. So in that way, I'm inclined to care.
I'm definitely interested in it. I've been a fan of this property. Hellboy in general is a comic book character that is like a demon from hell who's been repurposed to fight other demons. So it's kind of like this Constantine thing. Again, he was played by Ron Perlman and David Harbour in the past. This looks very Southern Gothic. You know, we're out in the woods. We're in Appalachia. There's snakes. There's witches. There's the Crooked Man in the background. It's definitely this isn't available to buy yet. There the comic storyline, it will be available at the end of this month. I'm definitely interested in reading that. I might do it before this actually comes out in September. So a strange little trailer, and I'm definitely interested in it.
Yeah. All right, one more before we move into Kinds of Kindness. What do you got?
Jackpot! Exclamation point. This trailer just actually came out today and is for a movie coming out in August, straight to streaming, starring Awkwafina and John Cena. In the near future, Awkwafina is an actress, struggling actress in Los Angeles who wins the lottery, just kind of out of the blue, wins the lottery. But there's a rule or law that if you kill the lottery winner, then you get to claim their ticket. And so now everyone's after her to kill her and claim her lottery winnings. When John Cena shows up in a police Uber to be her guardian angel and help her, claim the cash. It's an action comedy that looks like they shelled out for the budget. There's car chases, there's fist fights, there's stunts. And it looks pretty funny. John Cena is really funny in the trailer. And this is perfect for streaming, and it looks a lot of fun.
I'm wildly cynical about Jackpot. And it's pretty light fare. Andy said it's true. It's going straight to streaming, Amazon Prime, and it's rated R. Like it's an R-rated straight to streaming feature, so there's probably some goofy comedy in there, some big hits, right? Some awkward sequences. I like Awkwafina. I like John Cena. I like them both. The reason I'm skeptical about this is it's directed by Paul Feig. Ew, right? The director of Bridesmaids and The Heat and Ghostbusters 2016 and some really good Office episodes, admittedly, and I think a few episodes of Parks and Rec. But I am not warm on Paul Feig because Paul Feig's comedy so often seems to be in the style of like those old Judd Apatow films. You show up on set, you got your loose script, you have your actors go up, and then they basically just ad-lib or improv what they think is funny, and they shoot it, and then everybody has a good laugh on set, and then in editing they pick like the best take or whatever they think is the funniest, and that's what goes in the movie, and that's the whole film. And that seems to be a lot of what's going on here outside the action, which Feig does and is done well. I respect that. Also, John Cena is wearing a suit the whole time, which is exactly what Paul Feig does. That's his shtick. He wears a suit all the time, everywhere he goes. And Cena's wearing like a similar cut suit. I don't know. Like, maybe I'm overreading it. I just don't know. It looks odd. And I get the vibe that Jackpot's going to be the kind of film you throw on and sigh your way through. Yeah. But again, also, it's rated R and it's straight to streaming, like pretty lighthearted. So I don't, you know, what am I going to do? That's exactly where I'd put a movie like that. Like, Jackpot might be a good time. I guess I'd like to see another trailer or something.
Yeah. If it was asking me to buy a ticket, that'd be a different story. Asking me to spend some time on the couch for a streaming movie, much more doable.
Yeah. Stop in the middle and do your laundry or something. Who knows? Hey, I shouldn't write it off. And anything could happen. Like, I like Cena. I like Awkwafina. Like, it's got potential. That's what I think about Jackpot. But now we got to talk about the big film this week. Actually, the big film was Quiet Place. But the second biggest film, not counting runtime, is Yorgos Lanthimos' Kinds of Kindness. I'm going to be taking the summary on this one. And like I said at the top, disclaimer, I think. Andy and I knew nothing about this going in. We intentionally avoided long trailers, which are cryptic anyway. Yorgos Lanthimos' previous films are similar in this tone. Like, the less you kind of know, the better. You just want to go in wide. So if you are in that camp, now is your disclaimer. Now is your chance to bail and skip to the end of the episode and hear what we got going on next week and leave us a rating and review. Now's your opportunity to say, hey, I think I'm going to cut out here. I'm just going to go see it fresh. And I want to say, if you're thinking that, I think you should. It is a good time. I am going to recommend it. I think Andy will too. That being said, we don't do spoilers on this show. We don't give stuff away, but we are going to talk about some plot elements, you know, and I think that can be considered mild spoilers at best. So with that all being said, let's jump into it. The film is Kinds of Kindness. So, Kinds of Kindness is a short film saga. It's three films in one, right? Which explains the long runtime at 2 hours, 44 minutes. Kinds of Kindness is three stories with the same set of players. Similar to Wes Anderson, French Dispatch, right? Or maybe like a Twilight Zone kind of series. It stars Jesse Plemons, Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Hong Chau, Margaret Qualley. Who else am I missing? Mamadou Atti, Joe Alwyn, and a couple of other key players. And it is kind of a complicated movie. When I figured out I was doing the summary for this one, I was trying to kind of turn over the best way to talk about it, and IMDb's got a loose breakdown for me. In these three stories, a man seeks to break free from his predetermined path, a cop questions his wife's demeanor after her return from a supposed drowning, and a woman searches for an extraordinary individual prophesied to become a renowned spiritual guide. I'll talk a little bit more about each one of these stories as we go, but I do want to say off the top that this is a Yorgos Lanthimos feature. It is full of chunky dialogue and really big concepts and wildly triggering events that would be frightening to anybody. This is a hard R-rated film and covers really big ideas that are really scary. Andy and I had a walkout in our theater. It was amazing. It is a 3-hour sprint. My God, it is a film that moves fast. But I do want to talk about kind of the film proper and what we have going on. Off the top, before we get into kind of these individual plot lines, Andy, what did you think of Kinds of Kindness?
I wasn't real sure what to expect when I first came into this because the trailers don't give much away. The trailer are all vibes. You just see our cast of characters in different situations. There's mood, but there's just nothing tying it all together. And we really don't know until we see the first movie. What's interesting is that there's a through line through all these three stories, which are all completely disparate. That kind of has this theme of power and control. Those people with power, those without, those who seek to become a powerful person or to be seen in good favor of those who are powerful. In our first story, we have Jesse Plemons, who's kind of in this corporate job and is under the thumb of Willem Dafoe's character and who just completely controls his life, every aspect of it. When he wakes up, when he goes to the bathroom, when he eats, how much he's got away. Like, it's an absurdist thing. It's all metaphor. And he tries to break out of this. He's like, no, I don't want to be like this. I want to change something about this. But then he suffers kind of consequences of not being in the favor of a very powerful man, and he spends the rest of his time trying to get that favor favor back. This is, I think, an incredible set of short films. It's got some tough stuff. I saw in a thing there's like 53 content warnings, possible content warnings,
yeah,
on this movie. But incredible performances all around. I think it's doing some pretty bold things. Some of the boldest cinema I've seen. Like I said, we had a walkout near towards the end. That couple left that didn't come back. That's the kind of stuff I want to see. So I overall like really enjoyed it, but it'll blow your hair back. That's for sure.
Yeah. Andy's not kidding about the 53 content warnings. Like, it is wild how dark this film gets. And what's really incredible is how these films kind of stair step into it. Each one starts with, you knowing functionally nothing. Like Andy said, the marketing gives nothing away other than tone and vibes. And the song Sweet Dreams are made of these, which film opens with very charming. But I think going in, the less you know, the better. Obviously, listening to this review, we're giving some things away, but nothing too broad or nothing too specific, I should say. Andy already got into our first story, a man who is trying desperately to break free from this predetermined path given to him by a corporate overlord. Story number two, a cop in a small town who his wife has gone missing. Friends are trying to console him, make him feel better. She comes back, but she's not the same. She's different. And he's convinced that it's a different person entirely. And all his friends say, hey, come on, man, you're talking crazy. But he's not so sure. So he wants to put her to the test. And she, of course, wants to meet his expectations. He's her loving husband. Why wouldn't she? And then story number three, a woman who is tangled up in, I guess you'd call it a cult. I feel that's probably
some sort
pretty
of cult,
safe.
Yeah.
That's right. Who is looking for, who is supposed to be kind of this prophet character, a young woman who will help them go into the new age in some way or another. And ultimately nearly finds them, but in the kind of fashion that Yorgos Lanthimos invites. And I think that's a bit of a monkey's paw in all of these, right? That you get your wish, you get the thing you want, but it comes at a cost. It comes at a price.
But at what cost?
Yes, exactly. And these are the kinds of kindness. Each one of these stories is expressing a sort of kindness, a sort of something that the world would give you or somebody would give you, but that you ultimately have to be willing to give yourself, right? Whether that be a corporate overlord who gives you money and success and power, but comes at the cost of your autonomy, or a partner who gives you that feeling of comfort and warmth at home, but comes at the exchange of your belief, right? And what you see and your eyes and ears tell you versus what you feel to be true. Or, obviously, in our cult section at the end, the belief in a higher power, that there's something after this, there's something next, something greater than us, but you have to exchange your own mortal coil, your own earthly desires and objects and things in order to get that. Like, all of these are a kind of kindness functionally, but they're cynical and they're twisted. Some have called this movie downright mean, and I think it's true. I know Andy never saw one of Yorgos' really early films, Dogtooth, yeah, which I saw way back in the day and did not understand, and I didn't know anything about Yorgos Lanthimos. I just thought, wow, this is a wildly twisted feature. Since then, we've seen things like The Lobster and The Favorite. Lobster is a very mean movie. Killing of a Sacred Deer is a very mean movie. Like, these are films where people have accused Yorgos Lanthimos of being unkind to his characters. And fortunately, refreshingly, his previous work, Poor Things, might be his most accessible at his most weirdest.
Yeah.
Because it has a through line all the way through, and though it looks the strangest and has the oddest setting, like, I think it's the easiest narrative to get on board with. This is not for people who like Poor Things. I saw people who like Poor Things saw this, and they were like, Kinds of Kindness is not for me. This movie sucks. I don't like it. I disagree. I think you guys are looking at it all wrong. I think this movie's really special, actually.
Yeah, I've seen this compared to... I immediately thought of, like, this is like the Twilight Zone meets A24, because these are all kind of bizarre, surreal, kind of sci-fi stories, like that kind of have supernatural elements to them. I've also kind of heard it compared to Black Mirror, and that's, you know, those are dark properties, but they are peeling back the layers of humanity and taking a look and ask. And again, it's about power. The first story is very much a corporate setting, and it's like, to me, it was about how people will do anything to succeed in the corporate world, but a lot of times they make a lot of personal sacrifice, or that comes at a great cost of personal sacrifice in order to succeed. And a lot of times when they choose to have more freedom or more autonomy, then they kind of crave the life that they had. And so it's just an incredible look at humanity. And the fact that, that this theme is through all these three very, very different stories and styles is really stunning.
I've really been surprised at how much of the crew is involved in this film from Poor Things, because they look like such different features. Like, Poor Things reminds me of like the best of Tim Burton, like twisted and weird and insane lenses and black and white and wild colors, right? Like, and then coming to this movie, it's so much drier just on its face. Like, just looking at the trailer, I think my parents, who are not affiliated with any of these films, would be more inclined to watch Kinds of Kindness over Poor Things. It just looks like it's more accessible. It's a modern setting, but it's the same cinematographer, Robbie Ryan. It's the same music, Jerskin Fendrick, I believe, is back from the music. Yep. on the score, which is striking, awkward piano, which works great, by the way. It's still got weird lenses. It still has odd black and white sequences. Like, it has a lot of these features that Poor Things has, just much more, like, I don't know, artfully placed, I think, whereas Poor Things was like a deep dive into the world of Bella Baxter. This is a surface dive into the world of three different people who are having wildly different problems. And I like that the movie has so much to say about the people in these stories, right? They are uniquely human and refreshingly mortal, but also are not necessarily good people. Every one of these people does bad things to each other and has bad things done to them. And the movie starts soft. It hits you with the softest of the open. It's like, right. here's what seems dramatic in the first hour. And oh my God, that's awful. By the time you get to the end, you're like, dude, the stuff that happened in the first story is nothing compared to where we're going. Good God. It only gets worse. It's this deep dive into what's coming next. I think, watching this movie, I was a little concerned, or knowing what I knew about it before I went in, a little concerned that he didn't just release these three shorts like Wes Anderson did with on Netflix, right? Make three little shorts and release them on a streamer. It doesn't have to go to theaters. It'll just be its own thing, because he's already a weird director, and trying to get a film like this, it's 3 hours long, out in theaters, I feel like it's not going to have a lot of runaway success. It's weird. People aren't going to be in it. I thought, why not just release the shorts independently, right? Why not just go that way? After having seen the film, it is very obvious why these three shorts weren't released independently, because I don't think anybody would get through all three of them. It is a bit of a slog emotionally. And so seeing them all together, having them packaged as a full product, and having really clever title cards in them to pull you out of it and let you get off the ride a minute and kind of take a minute between sequences to refresh and kind of get yourself together before we kick into the next one, is perfect tonally. Additionally, having the same cast for all of these in different roles and having similar elements placed throughout, like how one character will reference sports in one story and in another story, sports is somebody's entire personality, the mention of dogs, raw meat, cannibalism, like a few consistent things that make these stories like uniquely surface level. It's like you're watching a play or an episode of The Twilight Zone, or a marionette show. We are not in a real world when we're watching Kinds of Kindness. We are in the world of the theater. But what we are seeing is a series of morals, a series of stories told to us. And I think that's really fascinating. Like, it's a really great place to put your audience.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about performances. We have this great cast, several Oscar winners here. Jesse Plemons is the lead in the first story, and alongside kind of Willem Dafoe, and then he's also the lead in the second story, and then Emma Stone has a larger role. She plays his wife, and then in the third story, Emma Stone is the lead, and Jesse Plemons kind of takes a back seat, and the rest of our characters kind of rotate in different amounts of kind of being the background actors or just less important players, but we get really incredible performances. Margaret Qualley, who I kind of had her in the same category as Maya Hawke, who I'm a hater of, because she's Andy McDowell's daughter, and she was on my Nepo Baby list. But she's actually really good in this. She probably has the smallest role, but she is still excellent in all three of these, and I think it's admirable that she's choosing to do the really weird stuff, because she could just easily jump into the Hollywood machine and do more mainstream stuff, but she's choosing to work with a very exciting and out there director. We get great performances from Willem Dafoe, who he's the boss in the first one. He's kind of a father figure in the second one, and a guru in the third. It's just, it's a very smart thing to reuse this cast. It's got a little bit of that Pulp Fiction feel, but everyone's roles are just so wildly different in each one. By the way, do you remember the name of each short story?
Yes. Yeah, I do, actually. Do you want to say them? I do know.
Yes, the first story is called The Death of RMF, who we're not real sure who RMF is throughout the whole. The second one is RMF is flying, and the third one is RMF eats a sandwich. The RMF is a bit of a mystery character through all three stories.
Yes. RMF eats a sandwich. Yeah. A theme that at the beginning just kind of teases you like, what's this? And the film opens with a very obvious nod of, okay, we have an identifier for what RMF is. And the rest of the film is just kind of strung throughout it, which I think is nice. The idea that none of these stories really connect, but the title cards tell us at the top, they do. It's very obvious. It's very obviously made to us. There is a connection here, but you have to look for it. And I think it's like, it's a satisfying little puzzle box of a feature. And it's messed up, dude. That's what I like. Like, it's bold cinema. It is big ideas, dark depths that Kinds of Kindness is diving into. And, like, how satisfying for somebody to go somewhere where we don't see. I've seen people saying that they don't like that Emma Stone is continuing to work with Yorgos Lanthimos. Yeah, they don't like that Margaret Qualley is, like, getting tied up with Freak Director. I think you guys are looking at it all wrong. I think Andy's right. Like, it would be so easy for everybody in this movie to go sign a Marvel contract tomorrow. A couple of them will probably be in Marvel features, and that's fine. But they want to do the weird stuff. They want to do the art. They want to make art for art's sake. I love that Emma Stone's in this film. And I love that she's a bolt of lightning that's uniquely held back from the open. Like, you don't even get Emma Stone for the first little bit of the feature, and then when she shows up, she's just like this bolt of red hair, right? She's Emma Stone. You know she's there. Like, you knew she was going to be in this feature. She opens the trailer. She's the biggest part of it. She's following on Poor Things. She's going to be in his next feature. And then when she shows up, it's like, oh, there she is. And then she's kind of presented more throughout the rest of the film before things are ultimately handed over to her in a protagonist role from Jesse Plemons. Like, even the order of the shorts in the film is kind of perfectly manipulated and orchestrated. And it's weird because looking at the trivia, I think there was an early cut of this movie where it was all one story and it wasn't three things. And then they kind of dialed it back and reworked it this way and that way. Like, and ultimately what came out feels like such a cohesive, unique piece of art that it's hard to believe that there was a version of this that didn't work before. Because what's here seems to work so well. And I love that people get up and walk out of it because it's horrible, freak stuff.
Yeah, I also, along those lines, I wanted to mention that this was actually shot and completed principal photography before Poor Things. So this was kind of a long gestating project, but that they had gotten the jump off kind of in the pandemic. I think it was actually a pandemic film that they managed to do. But it took a while to put the rest of it together and for it to... That's why it's coming out 6 months after Poor Things.
Yeah. I think this movie is super special. This is like, I liked Poor Things a lot. This is like, I need to get the Blu-ray. Like, this movie is super cool, man. Like, it's weird and it's twisted. My problem is, and I know we're about to get to recommendations, Andy, who the hell do we recommend this movie to? Like, there's nobody in my life that's going to go watch this. Like, they're just not. Nobody's going to sit for 3 hours of this. How can I freaks sit here and gush cinema. About this? Freaks of cinema. That's right. Where are my freaks at? How can I sit here and gush about this and have nobody to relate it to? You know what I mean? Like, who is this movie made for? Who is Yorgos Lanthimos trying to talk to?
Yeah, us. You and me and those who seek out bold cinema.
They say art is communication. I don't know exactly who he's trying to talk to, but Yorgos Lanthimos has something to say. Like, and every time I see one of his features, I like it more. Everyone ranks higher. I can't believe the people who are putting this at like 7 or 8 on his like best list. Like, crazy to me. Did we watch the same movie? What are you guys talking about? So anyway, with that, I don't have enough good things to say about it. Any other thoughts or recommendations, Andy?
Real quick, Hunter Schafer is also in this movie. She's only in one scene, but she is in it. Another, you know, big name in the movie.
Probably one of the scenes I've been turning over the most in my head, we won't talk about it here because it's kind of towards the end of the film. So I don't want to say it's in spoiler territory, but like, fascinating appearance. fascinating appearance by Hunter Shaver. Like, incredible pick.
Yep.
If you're gonna place somebody in your art, what a unique person to pick. Fascinating. Andy, would you recommend Kinds of Kindness?
Not to most people. This was an incredible film. I enjoyed it a lot. Like I said, there's something like 50 odd possible content warnings. It is very intense. It's not very mainstream, you know, like I wouldn't recommend it to, you know, the casual, like, you know, two movies a year crowd, or someone's parents who just like want to sit back and relax. But if you are on the lookout for something different, for something bold, something that will blow your hair back, something that you've never seen before, then Yorgos Lanthimos is the one for you, and that's who I would recommend it to. It is also very long, so I would encourage people to possibly check it out when it comes to streaming. I think I might try and catch it again in theater, but I think it will go down better because it is so long on streaming.
Yes, I'm in the same boat. I would recommend this movie to anybody that is even remotely interested. If you think it sounds cool, please go check this movie out. I think you should see it in a theater if you can. Like, I think, like Poor Things, the visuals are huge. And while a lot of people maybe won't appreciate that so much, I think if you're interested and you've gotten at this point and you still want it, if you still want a piece of what Kinds of Kindness is bringing, go check it out. Go support big cinema like this. Like, I can't believe it got a wide release. I don't know what wide audience would want to see it. I don't even, like, I get why the marketing has been weird. Like, it is twisted and odd and it is really slow. And it's big, stilted dialogue scenes. But, like, man, it's just such an interesting dive into these kind of corners of humanity in these, like, obscure, absurdist settings that are uniquely surreal. I think this movie is super cool, dude. I really like Kinds of Kindness. And that's our show. God, that's episode 258. Time flies when you're having fun. Andy, what are we watching next week?
Maxine, the long-awaited, not too long-awaited, but the follow-up to Ty West's X horror film, which came out in 2022, I think, along with the prequel film Pearl, starring, of course, Mia Goth, and a huge cast, which I can't remember all of, Elizabeth Debicki, Kevin Bacon, Giancarlo Esposito, and more. Halsey is in it. Maxine was the lone survivor from X, spoilers, and she escapes apparently to 1980s Los Angeles after being the lone survivor, where she's still trying to make it big, trying to be a star, but there's a killer on the loose, and she's trying to make sure no one kind of figures out her dark past. Really excited about this. I actually just rewatched Pearl last night. Also an incredible film. So really looking forward to that. Then we're going to be taking a look at something on streaming. Problemista is out on Max, which we had talked about before. The Beekeeper, also out on Prime. So we'll see what we're watching for next week, possibly something else. And some FYI releases. Despicable Me 4 opens actually tomorrow, Wednesday, July 3rd, getting a jump on the 4th of July holiday. And like we said, Maxine is this Friday, July 5th.
Big excitement for Maxine. I hear it's like odd and I'm like, ooh, yeah. Okay. Cause Pearl was odd. Like I'm good with odd. I Ty West gave me 2 out of 3 so far. I want to see if he can stick the landing with Maxine. And obviously I'm a big X fan. So that might be a good, I say, obviously, like you guys know, this might be the first time you've listened to the show. You may not know that we covered it back then. You can go check out our review and we'll have Maxine coming next week. Full disclosure, out of the two, I'm a little bit more interested in Problemista than Beekeeper, but I've seen a lot of Beekeeper memes and the memes are pretty good. So I think it might be a rip-roaring good time for all I know, right? Like, could just be cynical Jason Statham beating up on crypto bros for 90 minutes, and that's a good time. Who knows? Anything could happen. We'll settle on one of them. We'll cover it next week, next Tuesday, because that's what we do. We do movies every Tuesday on our Script Film Review. And if it's your first time listening, or maybe your most recent time listening, wherever you're at, we're excited to keep doing the show. We like doing the show. We're going to keep doing it. If you want to support us in any way, the best thing you could do is just subscribe to Off Script Film Review on your favorite podcast outlet, YouTube, wherever you're at, wherever you're watching this right now. Subscribe to the show. And you can keep up with us there. You can also rate and review. That would be a big help. Helps out your local podcasters more than you know. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, all the usual social media places. You can follow us there, comment. We're on YouTube. Big things going on YouTube. Come check us out over there. iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartMedia for the audio podcast. You may be listening there right now. And if you are, hey, hello. Shout out to our audio podcasters. We love you guys. And of course, you can check out our website, offscriptfilmreview.com. And you can mail us correspondence directly at mail@offscriptfilmreview.com. think that covers all the bases. Go check out Kinds of Kindness from all of us at Offscript Film Review, the home of Bold Cinema. I'm Zach Lewis.
And I'm Dr. Draper.
Thanks for watching.